Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. Happy Trending Thursday. If you've been following the show for any amount of time, you know that every day is a different segment. And today is Trending Thursday. It is bright and sunny here in Cincinnati, and I'm really excited about that because I tore up my grass and I needed for the sun to come out after I watered it so it would grow. So I'm very thankful for that. Today I'm excited about our show because we're going to talk about something that is trending at a high level, which is culture and everything from diversity and inclusion to prevailing attitudes about the workplace today. So I'm really excited about my guest today that's going to help me with today's conversation. I am Dr. Baker. I am the owner of the only business hospital in the world servicing 14 countries. And the only reason why I wake up from a business standpoint is to help other businesses do better. And when I say do better, that means by ways of health, making sure that you're foundationally sound and that you can be a part of your own rescue. And essentially, that is the exact same thing that we do here on this show, is that we provide tips, expertise, advice, recommendations, just overall really good dialogue surrounding more of our polarizing issues in the world of business. In the event that you want to join us today for our conversation, you can do so at 859-291-2255. Once again, that number is 859-291-2255. If you want to send us a message, you can at info@drbaker.us. Once again, that's info@drbaker.us. So ultimately, when we're talking about trending topics, we're talking about topics that a lot of people are talking about, or maybe they're coming up more frequently, or maybe it's about the vision of an industry and where things may be headed. And so what I would like to do is to either make clarification on some of these realities or get you prepared for what you need to know as a business owner so that you can behave and participate appropriately. And a lot of times it can be confusing when we think about how our world is changing. You know, I've had arguments in the past regarding, you know, evolution, and is evolution, you know, a positive thing? Is it a neutral thing? Is it a negative thing? And I submit to you, just because something changes, that does not necessarily denote that it's evolution, but it just simply means that things are different. And we are now working in an era and a time, a dispensation in the land that, you know, things are changing a host of different ways, and we have to be conscious about how those changes are. I mean, we have Tech Tuesdays, and when we talk about Tech Tuesdays, we have to be conscious about how technology is changing our work environment, and we have to pay attention to our technology stack in order to keep up in some instances, in order to be operationally efficient in others. Wednesday is Worldwide Wednesdays, and we talk about the effect that global elements have on our direct work here in the United States. Whether you have a micro or boutique business, what happens globally affects you in so many ways. And so therefore, we have to pay attention to that. And then inside of the workspace, what's changing? Well, things about, you know, identity, things about behavior and roles and responsibility, all of those things are changing in the workplace, and they're trending topics. And so we need to be conscious of those. We need to be smart about how we deal with those things. And that's where today's conversation goes. So without further ado, I'd like to bring on our today's guest, which is Melanie Boer. She is the president of People First, and she's a culture coach. And there's no better person that I can think of to talk about on this topic because she's remarkable at it. So without any more time given, I'd like to bring in Melanie Boer. Melanie, how are you today?
Hey, I am great. Thank you for having me today.
Absolutely. I'm really excited about, number one, your enthusiasm, because it's always through the roof. It's always literally out of this atmosphere, and I got to figure out how to tap into that. And then number two, you just understand your space really well. You have a pulse of the industry there. And so if you don't mind, fill our listeners in on what People First is and the work that you do.
Absolutely. The nature of my work is, how do we create best place to work environments for everybody? It's a little bit of a pay it forward moment, right? You know, this is bigger than just buying coffee for the person in line behind you at Starbucks. This is, you know, if we can create great workplace cultures where people enjoy going, and, you know, we all spend so much time at work, how do we do that? I got started, and I mentioned the almost forbidden word of human resources, right? People don't love human resources, but I can tell you, I love human resources, and I love the fact that we're oftentimes the problem solver when it comes to people in the workplace, and for good, bad, or indifferent. And what I've done is just take my knowledge of that and my knowledge about how to create good workplaces and being a good person, and kind of came up with some tools, and hopefully we'll talk a little bit about that today, but just some ways to make that happen, right? How do you make an actual intentional great workplace culture?
Well, you know, I see a lot of businesses that highlight, you know, if they've been voted one of the better places to work, you know, for so many years. And I always wonder, you know, who takes that vote? How do they do that comparison? But it's obvious that companies that boast that reality, they take their work culture or work atmosphere very seriously. And what do you think about, you know, today? And I'm looking for just from your own personal experiences, your own personal opinion. But do you think that companies are spending enough time thinking about their culture or the behavior in the workplace, or are they just forced to do so and they do it to check a box?
It's probably a little bit of both. I think that people think about it, but what our studies actually show is that less than 10% intentionally create a plan to do something about it. And that's huge, right? If I said to you, you know, do you create a financial plan? You know, CEOs, right? 100%, they create financial plans. You know, do they create a marketing plan or a strategic plan? Those are actually like 95 to 97%. But when we ask CEOs, you know, hey, do you have a written and intentional people and culture plan? It's less than 10%, which is huge, right? Like, follow that up with, and actually I usually, cart before the horse, I usually first ask, how important are people and culture to driving your bottom line? And that language is very important. I didn't ask about morale and ping pong tables and fun. I asked about, you know, the business. You know, are your people and culture driving the bottom line? And when we asked that scale of 1 to 5, how important are they? Believe it or not, we surveyed 200 CEOs, leaders, and they said it was a 4.8 out of 5. So they said it is really important, right? It is really important, 96% high, that people and culture drive the bottom line. Follow that up with that next question, right, which is, okay, now do you have a plan for it? And it was less than 10%. So what we're finding is there's the gap, right? We say that it's important, but we're not willing to put in the time and effort. We're too busy trusting our gut to really put in the time and effort and make that happen. And that's where my business comes in and where I can really help, my team can really help organizations kind of, you know, put your money where your mouth is, but say, hey, yeah, we do believe in people, and we're going to create an intentional plan to show that we do.
Well, you know, it's really laughable when you break information down in this manner. One thing that I lean on for my lifestyle is to say it out loud theory, and I didn't create it. I didn't invent that. I got that from Colin Cowherd, who's a sports radio television personality, but he would always say, you know, say it out loud and see if it still makes sense, and, you know, 20 years ago, I really thought that that was a good way of looking at the world. But having said that, you know, people are really important to us. They're so important, we're not going to do anything formal to make sure that their environment's good.
Right.
Right. When you say that out loud, it literally couldn't be more laughable. But what happens is that it literally is a reality that people are not formally trained in. I know what that looks like firsthand, considering that my PhD is in business and in leadership. And when I look at leadership, it's not something that's formally taught or trained. So when you ask someone about leadership, no one will tell you what their leadership style is. They'll actually make it up and tell you what their leadership characteristics are, but not their style. And styles are very specific, and those styles have never been written down or outlined or compared to the actual role and function of what they're doing and those that are following up underneath their guidance. And furthermore, the members, the followers, if you will, they have never been walked through. What does a style look like? What style do I prefer? Everyone is literally winging it in the workplace. And because they're winging it, it's leading toward what I would call mismatch results. Essentially meaning that you don't know what you'll get, so therefore you don't even know what to pay attention to in the workplace. So you've got, you know, superiors that are upset with team members. You've got team members upset with their supervisors. No one feels that they're understood or heard. And so now more than ever, people are switching jobs and changing jobs. What have you seen in your space that kind of outlines the fact that, you know, superiors or supervisors, managers, bosses, whatever you term them, that they're saying it's important, but yet they're not implementing. But what does that look like from the employee side or the team member side? Do they have articulations on if they feel as if they're being understood, or if they match in the workplace, or if they're being heard? What do you get a sense of from their perspective?
Yeah, so for that, I would kind of link towards most companies are doing some form of employee engagement survey, right? Like, is their voice being heard? And that's something, again, that if you're not doing it today, you should be doing. And even moreover, ideally, you're not doing it with your internal staff, because people have a very hard time trusting that the data they give will be kept confidential, you know, and then so they give very slanted information. They lean on the, you know, they're not willing to be critical and give really good feedback. But I think that's essential. You know, if you're creating a culture plan for your organization, yes, it comes from the top, but you need everyone engaged in it. Everyone has to be driving it forward. You need to hear your employees, right, and listen to their feedback. You should be doing at least an annual engagement survey. I don't think companies...
Well, how frequently does that happen? I go into different businesses every single day. Some are small, from micro or boutique, but some can range to really large. And in that instance, I'm finding, and I'm not looking as critically as you are, but I'm finding that many of them don't even carry out regular reviews or assessment periods. It's happening in a very, I would say, sub-formal standpoint or in a chaotic manner. What does that look like on your side?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Or they're doing the, hey, we got to do it annually. Let's check the box so we can say that we did it. You know, and I tell employers, if you're just doing it to check the box, or if you're just doing it to, you know, appease, and you're not really going to listen, then please just don't do it. Because that actually is even worse, right? When you ask the questions, but you're not willing to say, oh, we actually have a problem and we're going to make it better, that's even worse. So that's kind of what we've been seeing. And you're right, you mentioned something very important there. We're coming through tough times. And maybe it's just this generation, you know, who knows what it's going to be. If it's not COVID or recessions, right? It's all kinds of stuff that we're dealing with in the world. But I can tell you that this is the terminology, the great resignation, you know, that's out there for a reason. And that language is coming out because employees do not feel heard. You know, we've had this knee-jerk reaction to get back in the office. And people are going, wait a minute, you know, for a lot of these companies, we broke records. We did great things. And now you're telling me I got to be back in the office when I've been working remotely. And it's that combination of who needs you back in the office? Does that really need to happen? So we've been coaching employers to try and find a middle ground, right? Can you be more flexible? If you're having that, again, knee-jerk reaction to get back to how it used to be in the olden days, you're going to have turnover, right? And that's the thing that we're trying to combat here. It's very expensive to have continuing turnover and not retain your talent. So we're trying to help kind of as a stopgap measure, right? How do we help you keep your people longer? That's a means of saving, you know, money and helping your company profit.
Well, you know, I personally find this, you know, very much the Republican versus the Democrat response. And I'm not really saying that based on politics. I'm saying it as it relates to just the divisive nature between employer, employee, or, you know, team leader versus team member, is that there's some things that benefit one side that may not benefit the other side. And all of it has to do with mentality, goals, and what the expectations may be. When I think about today's worker, they look very different to me as it relates to loyalty. And you say, okay, what does that mean? And I'm not signifying that today's people are not loyal. I'm saying when it comes to the workplace, it looks different than what I'm used to coming out of Detroit, very, you know, hardworking blue collar, you know, town full of, you know, manufacturing and car plants. But I vividly remember someone going to work for Chrysler, and they just kind of worked there for 30 years, and whatever happened, it happened, and that's what they did. Or they went into the post office, or they worked for the city, and they just stayed there until their time was up. I don't hear about that nor see that nearly enough today, where it used to be frowned on that you could have, you know, six jobs in a 7-year span, whereas now you see people changing jobs every 18 months or so. And that's giving them experience or exposure, or it's building out their network, or they're collecting skills. How does that look on your side when, whether you're coaching an organization or you're coaching individuals, from the follower, team member, subordinate side, about their mentality going into the workplace? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, I think people aren't afraid to change jobs. I mean, that's, as you mentioned, you know, kind of growing up, I remember my dad saying that to me. He said, Mel, you're probably going to change jobs 8 to 10 times in your life. I mean, whereas he'd always been in the same profession, you know, he did change. He was a high school principal. So he did change schools a couple times, but not very often. And so I do think that generationally that is changing, but it's because people are not willing to sit back and say, yeah, I'm going to accept how it's always been. You know, they're expecting companies and leaders to adjust, right, to adjust their sales, to kind of say, hey, we're not going to just force people to fit in, you know, square peg, round hole. Like, we're going to adjust. We're going to do better. And this element of, you know, I always lead with this. I always say the best coaching advice I can give is to lead with respect. Oh, and by the way, that's free. You know, it doesn't cost money for me to be respectful. And even in my prior roles where I had to terminate people, I still did it with compassion and with respect, because humans deserve that. So when we're talking about, you know, generations and what's happening, I think people are changing jobs. I heard the statistic that it was like 43% of the population is changing jobs, looking for new jobs. Okay, I mean, we're talking about almost half, right? Like, people are willing to make changes. And this is a real opportunity for leaders to step up and say, how can I be better? You know, and again, to make it full circle moment, am I just trusting my gut, or am I willing to kind of put it out there and say, my people matter, my company matters, I want people to enjoy their work, and I'm going to do something different because what I did in the past might not be getting me where I want to go tomorrow?
Well, I think in that case, that's always the line for a business owner. Is where are you trying to go, and then what does that mean, and how does that connect to your value proposition? So as we look at value propositions, we look at them and say, well, let's say turnover in certain positions is important, but maybe in other positions it's not. It's hard to say that out loud because, in a sense, what you're saying is some people matter and some people don't. But how does that look in your place, in your space, when, let's say, your top management team members are considered to be valuable, so there are certain behaviors that go on along that group? But let's say, you know, you've got a widget maker or an individual that's doing a turnkey type of service for a company that is, I won't say easily replaceable, but not as hard to replace as the top management team. Have you seen companies that separate how they view their human capital in those ways, and they behave one way at one level than another, you know, for a different level?
I think we have seen it, but I don't think it's in good measure. I think that when we're out there coaching organizations to create this great culture, we talk about creating keys to success. And those, for a lot of companies, are their values, right? They're the pretty words that you see on the conference room wall, integrity, innovation, customer service. A lot of times it's some similar wording. But what has to happen is you have to hold everyone accountable to the same keys to success, the same values. Because the moment you start saying, you know, executive, oh, that's just how executive Bob is, we're not going to hold him to that same standard, you know, you're poking holes in something which would have otherwise been a potentially really strong culture. We want to hold people to the same standards. And so when we come in and coach, we say, hey, this is just how we do business. And anyone who you find yourself making an exception to these values, these, again, keys to success, that's a problem. And I would encourage any employer, no matter their size, to question that and to say, is Bob, who happens to be an executive, maybe he is the toxic person that's causing us problems or causing us turnover? And chances are, if you look at the statistics and numbers below Bob, you would see turnover because of how he is. So I love when we see employers challenge that and come back and say, that's not okay. We expect it from everyone. We expect everyone to uphold the same level of, again, these keys of success, and that's why our culture is successful.
Well, how much further does that go beyond a mission and vision statement? I mean, I know a lot of companies that have never even crafted mission and vision statements, and when they have in the past, they're more or less slogans, and they're not legitimate value propositions that everyone is adhering to inside the company. But what about you? What have you seen as it relates to, well, our mission is down there, but maybe it's on the wall, you know, in the lobby, but it hasn't permeated throughout the rest of the staff and the rest of the top management team. Have you seen that at all?
Yeah. So, you know, what's kind of unique for our firm and what we've come up with at People First, during COVID, I created a game, and, you know, a lot of people have played the game, not to, you know, Cards Against Humanity is an infamous game in many households. When you're playing with kids, it's called Kids Against Maturity. If you've never played it, that's a fun one. We actually created a game called Cards for Culture. And what we're doing is we're playing this game with leadership teams, and we're saying, hey, this is really important. We all need to be on the same page. And so even if you have the pretty words on the wall, we want to bring those to life, right? They're on the wall. They might be stale. You might have spent money to do it. I'm not really sure, right, how much they've already invested. But what we're saying is, hey, we can take it a step further. Not only should you define what those keys to success are, we truly mean define them. Put the behaviors behind what you want to see. So if one of those words is great customer service, does your team align with what you mean when you say great customer service? Because, you know, even Dr. Baker, you and I, you might think one thing, I might think another, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if we align and say, well, when we as a team mean great customer service, we mean we go above and beyond. We deliver on a timely basis. We give the client what they need, not just what they ask for. Like, we're going to really set to behavior. We can coach to behavior, right? It's harder to coach to feelings and emotions and pretty words. When we set behaviors behind it, we can rally the troops and we can say, this is what we mean by great customer service. And if someone falls off the wagon, we can coach them back on and say, hey, I always say, Bob, hey, Bob, you know, I noticed that you didn't deliver on a timely basis. And, you know, that's something that we really take pride in. You know that, because it's not a secret, right? We've defined this for everyone. And then the real kicker becomes, once we've defined it, we've gotten everybody on board, they understand the value and the behaviors expected of them, and that's key. The third step in our process is actually setting it into motion in your habits and in your tactics. We call that bringing it to life. And that's when you start to see things like putting it into your human resource processes. So when I'm hiring someone and they're sitting across the table from me and I ask them the question, tell me about a time you delivered legendary customer service. I'm hoping that they say things like, I delivered on a timely basis. I went above and beyond. I gave the customer what they needed, not just what they asked for. And then I can truly say that person's a culture fit, right? I don't have to guess. I know the kinds of behaviors they're going to deliver. And now we're setting them up for success in our own culture structure. That's how you drive to a strong culture. So you create the plan, you drive to it intentionally, and you bring it to life by putting it in your processes. It's not rocket science. And I, you know, honestly, we give away a lot of tools. We want people to do this. We'd love everyone to do this without our help. Unfortunately, that's just not human nature. You know, a lot of organizations need help. They need the accountability, or need their feet held to the fire. I'm not sure which one, to kind of get some of this stuff going. But the ones that are doing it, I mean, they're seeing all the things that come about with a great culture. And it does start with the better morale, improved performance, lower turnover, but you start to see things then like profits going up because your people are willing to run through walls for you. And that's when you really start to see the multiplier effect of what a great culture is.
Now, you talked about something that I hold pretty dear, and that's the understanding of words and the understanding of when something is stated, is it universally comprehended? And so you talked about, you know, good customer service. What does that mean? And what that looks like to us is X, Y, and Z. And not only should it look like something to you, it should also be received and look like something to someone else when they participate. You know, if I were to just give a random example, I don't know how you feel about, you know, like a Chinese restaurant, if you will, and say, well, do they give good customer service? Well, I don't know. As long as the food has been replaced when I go back up to the buffet line, in some instances, that might be really good customer service. If I have to wait for rice, then maybe it isn't. But in other instances, when people say good customer service, they might say Chick-fil-A. Why? Because they say please and thank you, and they have 17 people working the drive-through line. So even though the drive-through line looks really long, you kind of get out of there quicker than you would an empty McDonald's line, just because of the system that's been set up and what that looks like. And so the point of me saying that is that good customer service has to look like something, and has to look like something to those that are working there, and has to look like something to the people that you service, to that target audience. And I think what I'm hearing from you, and obviously never let me put words in your mouth, but as I go to explain this just a little differently, is that that is a formal step that gets done by the top management team in conjunction with the rest of the team members. And then that's put together in a written way to where they all understand it, can see it, behave toward it, and have something to measure to. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. And just like you said, you know, if we created this in a silo and leadership just passed it down, we would have a hard time getting buy-in, right? So while we say oftentimes we play this game, this Cards for Culture game, we play it with the leadership team, depending on the size of the company. I mean, we've been playing mostly with small to mid-sized companies. The bigger company that you are, you may want to look to be playing this within your teams or your, you know, departments, because culture is felt at a team level, right? So we have to have some hierarching things that we align on, but then those behaviors within our teams, how do we keep those aligned as well? So we're kind of having to do a trickle-down effect. So that's typically what we do, but the way you outlined it is exactly right. It's got to be people participate. We've even done this where leadership teams will hold, play the game, come up with the ideas, and we'll put out a survey to the rest of the team, depending on how big the company is, to hear their thoughts, right? We want to hear, well, which of these do you think are most important? What behaviors do you see happening? And then we combine the two. So we make sure that the team has some input in developing of these keys of success as well. So we're seeing that all around. The game is tons of fun. To our knowledge, no one else is gamifying culture at this point. So we're excited at the growth that we're seeing, the excitement around playing the game and helping drive great cultures for companies across the U.S. at this point.
You know, you said something that I don't think I've heard said this way, and so I think it's worth mentioning and repeating so that the listeners don't lose it. But culture is felt at the team level. So many times I hear individuals talking about culture and how it affects them personally, but I don't oftentimes hear about it from a team standpoint. So let's say, for an example, I think that something should be done differently. All I'm going to do is talk about what I think. And so obviously I'm stressing the word I, because that's what happens. But I think the difference is, what does that look like for all of us? And does the culture work for the whole, the collective whole, more than it might for any one individual? I mean, if you play a sport, that is always spoken of, but it's not always something that's been harnessed. But if we take it away from the sport and we put it into the workplace, then by all means, everyone's job within that workplace is connected to someone else. So if I'm in the marketing department, well, the sales department is affected by the decisions and the behaviors of the marketing department. But the people in the supply chain and operations, they have a lot to do with what's going on in marketing, but simultaneously the salespeople have to have something to sell, so therefore it's connected to the supply chain. So I'm only using those examples to highlight the fact that it very much is a team reality, but to actually express that the culture is felt at a team level is really, really important. Can you expound on that a little bit more so I can make sure that the listeners truly understand how important it is to be thinking team when we think culture?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you think about, you know, I've worked for some big organizations in the past, and, you know, we're talking, one's a big retailer that, you know, is across the country. Of course, it's been shrinking in modern times, but, this is a big Red Star retailer. So, great company to work for, but I will tell you, you know, when there's so many people, it's hard, even despite their best efforts, and they did a great job, you know, trying to make culture happen. But it was really hard to not sometimes feel like a number, right? Because you have 250,000 people that work for the company, right? So it's hard. But what I can tell you is that when and if I'm picturing, you know, if I was to go into that HR department where I was and play this game, what happens is the conversations open up that you've never had before. Conversations that are like, hey, when I'm talking about, again, use that customer service example, or let's use integrity. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Let's use integrity as an example. If we talk about companies that are using, that have great integrity, well, you and I, we grew up in different houses, right? So we grew up in different cities, states. Everyone's experiencing that similarly. And so if we come together and say, well, what does it mean to have integrity? We have to define that together as a team. And so we walked into one team example, and there was this, again, I'll use Bob. Bob was always late. And when we were defining what integrity meant, the leaders just kept saying, he's so disrespectful. He's late all the time. It's an integrity issue. And we had to kind of stop them and say, I think Bob has a time management issue. You know, I don't think, if you were coaching Bob and told him he had an integrity issue, I think he would vehemently disagree. And it was the first time they really thought about it from that perspective. They thought Bob was being, you know, so wildly disrespectful showing up late. They questioned his integrity. And when we rephrased it and said, what if in Bob's family upbringing, that just wasn't a big deal? You know, they were very fluid with time. Again, time management. We're helping people think differently. Now, I can tell you, when we went back in and redefined integrity about ethics, right, and how you handle your business operations and professionalism and all those great things that might include integrity-based language, they didn't have as big of an issue with what was happening with Bob. You know, they knew they needed to address his time management skills. I'm just saying this in the way of getting your team. So to go back to the question, we have to figure out how to get our teams on the same page and define and know that we're aiming for the same kinds of goals. So when we talk about customer service matters or we have integrity with our work, are we speaking the same language? And that's why it's important to sit down at the table and have these conversations because, you know, I can tell you one client, we sat down with them and he said, we got more done in 2 hours than I had in 10 years because I've just never had these kinds of in-depth conversations with my teammates. And we walked away so much more on the same page, right? So that's kind of that whole, you know, get your team on the same page, start speaking some of that same common language. And when you find someone is just not able to be on the same page, and again, this runs across all, you know, we're not talking about, this could be any color, any background, right? This isn't a diversity issue. This is more about just like work ethic, right? Or again, how we deliver customer service, how we innovate with our clients. There's certain things that are very important and inherent to our business, and that people can usually align on.
Well, you know, you mentioned quite a few things that I want to touch on, and I'm going to bring those up here after we break for a quick moment for a station identification. Today, episode of Trending Thursday is brought to us by Bazemore Beard Oil, which is one of the Bazemore products. Bazemore Beard Oil is the beard oil that allows for you to have a more quality beard, a longer, thicker beard, if you like, or a better smelling beard. There's three fragrances, which is Nova, Flight, and Waves. You can find Bazemore Beard Oil on bazemoreproducts.com. That is Bazemore products.com for Bazemore Beard Oil. If you want to have diversity in your beard, better control, tame your beard, better looking beard, Bazemore Beard Oil is the way to go. Once again, you can find that on Bazemore Beard Oil or bazemoreproducts.com. And today we're being joined by Melanie Boer. She is the president of People First. She is a culture coach, and we're talking all things culture today. If you want to join our conversation, you can do so by calling 859-291-2255. Once again, that's 859-291-2255. If you want to send me a message directly, you can at info@drbaker.us. And then, Melanie, if anyone wanted to contact you at People First, how can they go about doing so?
Well, I would love to be connected through LinkedIn for sure. That's probably the best way so that we're always connected. My email would be another great way. So Melanie@thrivewithmb, that's T-H-R-I-V-E, with, and the letters M as in Melanie, B as in Doer. Would love to connect any way that they'd like to get a hold of me.
Fantastic. And so, for those that may just have joined now or have been listening, we're obviously talking about culture and what that looks like in the workplace. And Melanie, you talked about Bob and how Bob might be a habitually late person. And so the company views that as disrespect, but maybe it's a time management issue. And I think that's a fantastic point as it relates to understanding how someone comes to a place. And when I say come to a place, I'm saying that how do they derive at behaviors? How do they see the world? What is their perspective? What have their experiences been? And how does all of that play inside the confines of an organization or a structure? That's one thing that I talk about regularly when I'm talking about leadership styles. Anytime I'm brought in to do a keynote or I'm doing a training of any type, is that if you're looking at the wrong leadership style, you might call it bad. There's a lot of people that I've seen that would see a leadership style and say, well, that's a bad leader. And it's, no, it's not a bad leader. It's the fact that you don't understand the style and you don't necessarily like the style. So because that style doesn't correlate with you, you receive it as bad. So as an example, I would ask people, well, you know, autocratic leadership, what is it? Well, once I ask them, they don't know what autocratic is or what it means, but it's the dictator form of leadership. And I say, well, how many people want to be dictated to, told what to do at all times and micromanaged? How many people like that? And everywhere that I've gone, I've never seen a hand go up. And I say, well, is it beneficial? Does it work? And they pause and they start to think like, well, yeah, it kind of does work. I said, where does it work? And they start naming a host of areas, you know, something as high as, you know, military operations all the way to kindergarten classes. And I said, right. So the kindergarten teacher has to be an autocratic leader in that class in some cases, because the kids would run amok if the teacher didn't. And so they are in agreement with that. And I say, well, if you saw that in that context, would you call that leader good or bad? And then they change their answer and say, well, in that instance, it's good. And so I submit to them that leadership is neither, or leadership styles, therefore, neither good or bad. It's based on the situation and it's based on how everyone receives it. And so I'm only, you know, taking the time to tell that story in reference to your story about Bob, is that if you don't understand what you're looking at in Bob, or you've never had the dialogue, or Bob has never been, you know, challenged with the behavior at any, you know, receivable level, then you can have another mismatch, a philosophical mismatch, which in many cases leads to turnover. Bob hates the workers or the top management team because they're always calling him disrespectful and rude, and he knows in his heart that he isn't. Or they get rid of Bob, but Bob has never been shown the error of his ways in comparison to the expectation of the company. And some people would say, well, isn't that basic? Isn't that standard? But I submit to you that almost nothing is basic and standard when you're dealing with people, because our experiences are so vast and what we're used to varies so greatly that the range of the spectrum is so wide that you have to grab it by the horns and then subject it to what it is that you all do in your place. So therefore, a new baseline can be drawn for the common purpose of the team. So in that instance, you know, you have your card game that they can play that can help them understand it. How open our top management teams at receiving this type of discussion, this type of paradigm shift, this type of action to then go in and really massage their culture?
That is the question, Dr. Baker. I mean, anytime I'm out speaking or delivering, you know, I'm, you know, doing all kinds of stuff, right? Podcasting, your amazing show here. I'm talking to people all over. And the question I always get is, what happens when your leaders aren't on board? What happens when, you know, I can lead the horse to water, but I can't make him drink? That is the most common question that I get, because honestly, there's just a lot of those, what you call it, autocratic dictator type leaders that in some cases it's not working for that person and they don't know what to do. And as you mentioned, you know, that style needs to adjust in this example. What I would say is sometimes your leaders get it. You need to find those. And when they don't, at least if they're open and willing to make some changes, I used to not have a good response completely other than you might want to leave. But now I can say, you should offer them the game, right? You should say, hey, you know, I know we're not perfect here, but I think there's some things we could do to really engage our team and bond together and improve our language and communication. And wouldn't it be fun to kind of to do this? And so the game kind of heals that wound a little bit. It's an easy option to offer leaders that need to make a change, but they don't know exactly how. It's a, I feel like it's the tool we've always been looking for. So the game is absolutely there. You know, there's some people that are like, well, we want to do it ourselves, or, you know, And to that, I would say, great, I wrote a book. You know, you can go read the book and do it yourself, because I'm giving it all away. Conscious Culture is the book. So make sure at least you get the name out there. You know, people can get it on Amazon. If you can do it yourself, I'd prefer, you know, I want people to do it. And if you don't even want to spend the, whatever, $20 on the book, I would say, well, we have a free model, right? So there's no excuse for you not to do something about your culture. And the free model is on the website. You can actually download the Thrive model and create your own plan so that you can be in that elite 10%, right? Remember I mentioned there's only 10% creating an intentional plan. We want to grow that number. And so we give the Thrive model away in an effort to say, hey, if you do these things, here's your written plan. And if you do these things, you can change your culture. You can make it happen. And then it's like, you know, on the back end, like if you need help, you know where to find us. So there's really no excuse for people not to put in a little bit of time and effort to really reap the rewards.
Well, I think you mentioned a few things that I don't want to get lost once again on the listeners, which one of them is to have a tool. And when I think about all the different components of a business and all the hats that a business owner wears, one thing I do know is that if they have customers and they're taking money from those customers, they use a tool. Mm-hmm. I do know that if they were to go file taxes, well, there's a tool to extract, you know, the tax returns, the bank statements, the transactional history. There's a tool that's being used. Many companies have inventory or equipment of some type that they're using to create their product and deliver their service. So what I'm saying in this instance is that you're now naming tools that a business owner can use in order to enhance the viability of their culture. And it should not be ignored. I think what happens is that most business owners don't really know that there are tools to help them fix that part of the problem. And you've got a scenario where if it's really important, and I always find out what's important to people based on their behaviors and the things they engage in, is that if it's really important, now we need to seek those tools. And one thing that you have at People First is that you have those tools, whether it's your Conscious Culture book, whether it's through the gaming mechanism, all of these things become tools. But I think it all starts with the paradigm of saying that I actually do believe that my people are important. I do want to minimize turnover, and I do want to make sure that this is a place where individuals can thrive, want to work, and make this place a better place. When we look at, you know, certain metrics such as turnover and the cost of turnover, how frequently do you go through different realities to a business owner to say, you think you can make more money by selling more widgets and things and flip contributors, but you would actually make more money if you lost less people less frequently and you were able to empower them in these ways and they had better job satisfaction? Do you guys walk through certain metrics that way, or at least at a minimum have those types of dialogues? And if so, what does that look like on your side? What are some of the information that's been given back to you from some of these top management people?
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit tricky because culture is a hard metric to drive to. But we're creating ways that you can kind of, that you can look at that. One of the things that we really talk about is, you know, it's the carrot or the stick, right? Are you out there saying, hey, we can do these great things, rah, rah, let's put in a ping pong table? Maybe, but that's probably not getting leadership ear, right? When you can say things like the cost of turnover, now this is a wide number, but the cost of turnover is typically anywhere from 2 to 4 times someone's annual salary. So if you lose one person, right, they make 50 grand a year, losing them is going to cost you 100 to 200,000 because no one's there to do the job. You got to re-recruit. Your team has to stop what they're doing and spend time filling the gap, which means their job's not getting done. Like it's a big trickling effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you can take that huge number and go, man, the cost of turnover really is troublesome. You know, I mean, how can I keep and retain them so I don't have to keep churning and burning through employees? That's a huge metric. I also like to kind of tell this quick story of, you know, I was working for this one company, small design firm, and we were trying to win best places to work. We were getting ready to go serve at the Free Store Food Bank, which you and I know here in Cincinnati, they make power packs for kids, hungry kids. Mm-hmm. And kind of what was happening was we were giving everyone a half day off. We were excited to go. The team was excited. We're talking about a 90-person company and about half the people in Cincinnati. So that week, I step into my COO's office, and he's having a blow-up moment of, how can we possibly do this? How can we give everyone a half day off? And I don't know if we're going to meet our quarterly numbers, right? We're not going to meet. He's having this moment. And now luckily, he and I got along really well. And I just looked at him and I said, we're going. You know, this would do more damage now to stop the train. Like, people are excited. They're getting their work done. There's an intrinsic value to doing this. And he just kept saying, show me the number. Like, show me the number that if we go, we're still going to make our quarterlies. It was like a Jerry Maguire moment, right? I was like, I can't show you a number or a hard metric. So we go, we do this thing, and the team loves it. We take pictures. I mean, not only is it good for PR and marketing, but it was great for team building. And on the way home, I'm getting a call from this gentleman. I pick it up, and he's quiet, which he's never quiet. He's quiet, and he says, you were right. And I'm like, tell me more, right? Tell me more. Yeah, I wasn't. Mm-hmm. He said, that was amazing. It felt so good. We created, you know, 2,500 power packs for hungry kids. The team was happy. Now, lo and behold, right, we go on to win a best place to work after this. But, you know, we were putting the stuff in motion to make that happen. And, of course, I took the moment and I stopped and said to him, show me the number. And he was like, you're right. I don't know. You know, hopefully, I think we're going to meet our numbers. He's like, I don't know. I guess the proof's in the pudding. I can tell you they went on to sell this company for a lot of profit. They did all kinds of great things. We won best places to work. It did work out, but you got to kind of have faith in the people, right? Faith in the system. It can't always be a carrot or stick approach. I mean, yes, you're going to save turnover money, but you can do it in a really positive way and really build into the team that you're creating.
Well, I think, you know, when we talk about quantifiable results, I think just staring into the eyes of the actual humans that are still working there is one quantifiable reality, is that you can look at your turnover decrease from year to year, but you can also look at the skill sets that improve with your employees from year to year. You know, there's, for an example, there's a tech company that I work with, and this tech company wants to develop more individuals throughout their company. Well, if the culture is sound, one thing that they'll see is that individuals will come in as juniors, and then they'll go into, you know, just a regular status, and then one day they'll elevate to senior. Well, there may not be a numerical quantifiable cost of that reality, but what you can see is that this person started with us and they were novice. Now this person is an expert. We kept all that talent here. And not only did you keep that talent there, you can assume, I think it's a safe assumption, that now when new people came in, because of their longevity, they've been a part of training that person and making sure that the culture remains something that everyone can be proud of. And that's the health metric that I know that I work toward when I'm providing business treatment, is it isn't so much how many you know, dollars you'll make or how much sense does this make from a monetary standpoint, but it's more about how healthy are you? And so if I were to use a sporting analogy, well, sometimes, you know, you can get a good result even though you have bad health. But what's more important is to have really good health, because really good health increases your opportunity for better results over time. And I think that's what we're talking about here, is making sure that you have a healthy culture, and that for a fact can then be outlined. And that's outlined by certain realities such as retention, job satisfaction, but you also have to know the pulse of everyone working there. That's why it's important to survey those that work there. It's important to, you know, to be able to offer recognitions, promote from within, on and on and on, and you can actually see the growth. I'll share a really quick story about when I was at the dealership. I was director of sales at a relatively large dealership here in Cincinnati, and I did that for roughly 7 years before transitioning to entrepreneurship. And one thing that I had noticed in year two of my leadership is that none of the sales consultants had ever been awarded, ever. So they would just sell, but no one ever really highlighted the fact that someone had done well. And then it went from, well, if no one even said good job on the actual volume you moved, no one even congratulated you about being just a good employee. And so I started having Employee of the Month awards. And I'll tell you what phenomenon came from that, is that individuals were looking forward to being Employee of the Month more than being Salesperson of the Month. And I had an inkling that it would happen, but it was really cool to see in real time, because the sales industry, or at least the automotive industry, is dominated by how many cars you sell. That is what makes you a good person or a bad person, based on those digits. Well, we changed the narrative and said, no, this person may not have sold the most, but they were a great teammate. They made sure that the lot was good all the time. They made sure that customer service was through the roof, all of their loans funded in a timely fashion. So it was all of the other elements that went to making our department, making our division a really good place to work. It wasn't just about moving cars, because you could have a person that had a bad attitude, was really mean to people, but they could still be the number one salesperson. And if that was what we were rewarding, then that would become the standard. But we changed that paradigm. And I've been gone from the dealership many, many years, but they still have the Employee of the Month go up, because that became something that was important to the culture of the sales professionals. I bring that story up to say that you won't always understand the bottom line of where your culture has increased, but it's still important nevertheless. When you're talking with business owners or team leaders, you know, you talked about, you know, making them understand the benefit of that. Do you find yourself spending more time there with the conversion or the persuasion that this is needed? Or do you spend more time with the analysis of the culture and then providing the education around each specific scenario and then helping them understand where they can get better? Which one is where do you believe you spend most of your time, with the persuasion or really the diagnosis, if you will?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do feel like we spend a lot of time persuading a little bit, and maybe that's, it's a combination of making sure we're in front of the right people that really care, and I feel like you shouldn't have to persuade. But when we are in front of the right people who get it and who know how the power of culture, it's great to be able to come in and just say, let's just work on it, right? Let's just hit it out of the ballpark, and here's these tools that we've created. And you know, I would be remiss to say, you know, we spend a lot of time recruiting as well, because recruitment and making sure you have the right people on the team, that's part of, I mean, whether it's the diagnosis or part of the strategy to fix it, you know, that's a huge piece of what we do as well at People First, right? The recruiting the right talent and offloading the bad, or the toxic, we would call it. That's a great way to turn the boat a little bit faster as well. So, you know, a little bit in the middle, we definitely see a little bit of both. We prefer to spend our time in the diagnostic side, but it is a little bit of both.
Well, you know, we're talking about things that, you know, quite frankly, where would anyone ever be trained to do so? You know, if you were a coder, you would learn that specific skill somewhere. If you wanted to be in sales, well, you can find a sales class, a sales book, a sales seminar. People are making crazy amounts of money selling the ability to sell. So those things you have access to. But I would like to say that, you know, at least in my lifetime and my experiences, there's not a lot of people offering culture training. And when I say culture training, I'm talking specifically looking at how the people interact and engage with one another, isolating that aspect from the rest of the aspects, and then saying, this is how you integrate and get better at it. I haven't seen that over, you know, the last three decades of individuals really participating with that at a high level. And so because of that, it leads me to believe that it just feels uncommon. It feels unknown. It also feels as if it's something that people can just handle on their own. Do you think that people are taking that for granted and just saying, I can just fix this on my own, and that they don't even know to ask for specific or expert assistance with that?
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, if you were to ask a leader about their skills, right, a lot of them can easily comment about their amazing people skills, because that's not something they feel like they have to go to college to earn a degree or get certified, right? Like, everybody has some level of people skills. But if you were to say, well, can you go ahead and can you build your own website, or can you, whatever, can you do your taxes? It, all those kinds of things that might require more specific skill sets. Can you be your own IT department? You know, they're willing to outsource that. They're willing to say, man, I got to spend money because I don't think I have that skill. But when it comes to the people element, everyone thinks they have it already. The problem is, and what we've seen time and time again, and you know, turnover numbers prove it, is that they're just not putting in the time and effort then. They're winging it. There's just not a lot of intentionality, and they all think they can do it themselves. So, I mean, I would say it's like the strength of a real leader is being willing to say, I need help in this area, and I'm willing to ask for help. I'm willing to get better. And that's what we're hoping that people are able to say. We don't want to make people feel incompetent. We want to help you shine, right? We want to help you be a superstar. And we can do that in a way that's just building into your skills. You can lead it at your company, you know? So to play along with that, we offer a culture certification where a leader could come in and get certified by us and lead it in their organization. So they don't have to say, I don't have that skill. You can literally get certified and be the one responsible for leading it in your organization. So we're trying to give people the tools, set them up for success, and make all those things happen.
Well, I think, you know, with that being something that's new, you know, sometimes people might say, well, heck, we had to get licensed for this, we had to get certified for that, we had to bring a consultant in for this, we had to bring in a third party for that. Why would I bring this one in when really, why don't we just be nice, come in, do our job, and work really hard? And I think it's minimized as if that's the only portion of it. But when we look at our lives, we recognize that our life actually shows something significantly different. You know, if we had to once again say something out loud, how many of us have ever needed counseling in our personal lives or have gone to a family counselor because of family problems or go to service and deal with a pastor or a parishioner about how they feel spiritually or psychologically? And all of those individuals, in many of those cases anyways, have been trained to assist with the psychological, emotional, mental reality behind you. Well, at work, it's the same thing, is that there's a lot that goes on there. And if I'm a business owner, I know that, in which I am, I want my culture to look a certain way. And that's fine if you set out for that, but then it has to mimic those that you're bringing in to the business. And I think oftentimes what happens is that you get lost because everything else feels pressing. Everything else feels like we have to take care of this, and culture would be nice to have. In our limited time, how much of that thinking do you think needs to be changed where really culture needs to be at the top, and then that will take care of everything else?
You're exactly right. To hit on that therapy idea, right? Most Americans, they're not going to therapy till it's broken, right? If it's broken, oh, now I need therapy. Whereas, like, think of what a happier society we would be if everyone just went to therapy on their own, you know? Like, let's go before we've broken the ship, or, you know, the ship has a hole in it. I think culture is the same thing, you know? You can't wait until it's going down the drain to be like, now, oh, my gosh, I'm desperate. Culture is probably never going to fall in the urgent and important bucket. It is urgent. I mean, it is important. It's probably never going to be urgent. And we as smart leaders have to figure out how to step back and go, okay, it's vitally important, but it's not on fire. I'm going to take the time to make it happen. That's, I think, a real sign of a leader, you know, being able to spend the time on the things that really matter, even when it's not on fire.
Yep, makes sense. Well, that's close to the end of our show. Melanie Boer, please tell everyone how they can reach you one more time.
Yes, I'd love for people to reach me. Probably best, again, reach out through LinkedIn. It's Melanie, B-O-O-H-E-R, President of People First. My email address is melanie@thrivewithmb. That's my website is thrivewithmb.com. You can get a free Thrive model there. Would love for people just to take the initiative, make great improvements, make their culture awesome.
Fantastic. Everyone, thanks so much for listening to us today. We had Melanie Boer in, President of People First, Culture Coach. Hopefully you learned a little bit about the priority of culture in your workspace. We want to make sure that your place of business is healthier. Please join us tomorrow for Financial Freedom. I am Dr. Baker, and this is today's session of Doctor's Orders.
Thanks
so much, everybody.
Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.